These examples are not drawn from any of my own journeys to El Convento, but they are at least drawn from a journey to Italy. This journey took place in the summer of 1966, when I passed through Italy on my way to Greece, entering the country by way of the Gotthard Pass and leaving it from the port of Brindisi. It was my first visit to Italy, and since I had been intensely interested in Italian art, especially Italian Renaissance art, ever since my childhood, I wanted to make the fullest possible use of my opportunity. Wherever I went, I tried to see every church, palace, museum and art gallery, and every sculpture and painting that each one of these contained. In this way, I traversed northern Italy, passing through Milan, Bergamo, Brescia, Verona, Vicenza, Venice, Padua, and Ravenna. Probably I saw hundreds of buildings and thousands of sculptures and paintings. As the days went by, however, I became aware that I was being drawn by some paintings, for instance, much more than by others. And that the attraction often had more to do with the theme of the paintings than with the quality of their execution or the reputation of the artist. One of the themes or subjects by which I was most drawn was that of Saint Jerome. Saint Jerome is one of the four fathers of the Latin Church. He lived in the latter half of the 4th and the first quarter of the 5th century, and was a contemporary of St. Augustine, another of the fathers of the Latin Church, with whom he had an acrimonious correspondence. When he was already middle-aged, St. Jerome left Rome and went to live in the Holy Land at Bethlehem, and it is at this stage of his career that he is usually depicted in Christian art. In the course of that journey in 1966, I must have seen 2 or 3 dozen St. Jeromes, and I have seen many others since, either in the original or in reproduction. He is usually represented either in the desert or in his cell, and either on his knees in front of a crucifix or at his desk. I was drawn most of all by those paintings which represented him in his cell or study, with an hourglass in front of him, a lion, which he had tamed, sleeping at his feet, his red cardinal's hat hanging on the wall. Due to his association with the reigning pope, he was traditionally regarded as a cardinal, though cardinals as such did not come into existence until many centuries later. A large volume open before him, and a quill pen in his hand. St. Jerome was, of course, responsible for the production of the Vulgate, the standard Latin version of the Bible, which was in use throughout the Middle Ages. And when represented in his study, he is generally understood to be engaged in this great work. Incidentally, he is represented as a very old man with a long white beard. Sometimes his cell study is practically bare, sometimes furnished with every scholarly comfort and convenience. Somehow, this theme or image took hold of my mind. St. Jerome was the wise old man. And as you know, the wise old man is one of Jung's archetypes of the collective unconscious. That he was engaged in the work of translation, especially that of rendering the Word of God into ordinary human speech, meant that something hidden in the depths was being brought to the surface, or brought from darkness into light. Thus, St. Jerome was the alchemist, another embodiment of the wise old man. His cell study, sometimes depicted as a cave, was the alchemist's laboratory. Indeed, it was the alchemist's limbeck, in which the Red King united with the White Queen, or his crucible, in which lead was transmuted into gold. In this way, the image of St. Jerome in his study tended to merge with other images, not only of the alchemist in his laboratory, but also of the philosopher in his study, especially Rembrandt's philosopher, as he sits with the staircase spiraling up through the darkness behind him. No doubt, I was drawn to the image of St. Jerome partly because of my personal situation at the time. I was living in the desert. I had left the Rome of collective, official, even establishment Buddhism, and was seeking to return to the origins of Buddhism in the actual life and experience of the Buddha and his immediate disciples. Not only that, I was trying to teach Buddhism in the West, which meant that I was trying to communicate the spirit of the Dharma in terms of Western rather than in terms of Eastern culture. I was thus a translator, with all that that implies in the way of seeking to fathom the uttermost depths of what one is trying to translate so that one may translate it faithfully, i.e. bring its meaning to the surface, or from darkness into the light. Thus, I was drawn to the image of St. Jerome and was able to see that image as an embodiment of the archetype of the wise old man as translator, an alchemist, because I had a personal affinity with that image, or because there was something in me that corresponded to that image. In other words, I possessed or had developed a faculty for the perception of that kind of image. I possessed an imagination, or, since the word imagination is often used in a pejorative sense, I possessed at least the rudiments of what has been called the imaginal faculty. This imaginal faculty enabled me to see in the figure of St. Jerome more than what was given by the paintings themselves, whether considered as works of art in a modern sense or as examples of traditional religious iconography. It enabled me to see the figure of St. Jerome, who in a sense was no longer St. Jerome, as in fact belonging to a completely different plane. It enabled me to see him as an image that had its existence in a world of images, or in an imaginal world, a world to which one has access by virtue of the imaginal faculty. Another image to which I was drawn at that time was the image of the angel, though I was not drawn to it as much as to the image of St. Jerome. Indeed, I must have been drawn to this particular image quite early in life, for I can remember executing a whole series of pencil drawings of angels when I was 13 or 14. These angels I depicted as hovering in or flying through the air, and since one of them carried a sword, he was, I suppose, the Archangel Michael. Some years later, during my stay in Kalimpong, I was deeply impressed by the image of the angel as he appears in Rilke's Duino Elegies. More recently, having allowed my interest in angels to lapse for a number of years, I have taken up the study of this image again and have even devoted a certain amount of thought to it. Some of you may recall that thanks to reproductions of the well-known painting in the National Gallery, London, the image of Tobias and the angel is now well established in the FWBO as an image of Kalyana Mitrata, or spiritual friendship. You may have encountered other versions of the same subject in the course of your journey to Il Convento, as I myself did in the course of both my 1966 visits to Italy and my four journeys to Il Convento. that you should see paintings of Tobias and the angel on the way to Il Convento is, of course, wholly appropriate, for your journey to Il Convento parallels Tobias's journey to Reges, and like him, you need to be accompanied by an angel, whether visible, whether invisible or invisible form. Indeed, unless you are accompanied by an angel, the journey to Il Convento is not the journey to Il Convento at all, but only a journey.